The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into Tuesday, Gary, how are you?
Doing really good.
Yeah?
Hanging in there. We got a great show today. After China retaliates, what is next? We'll get to that. A.G. Barr, that's the Attorney General, William Barr, assigns a U.S. attorney to look into government surveillance involving the Trump campaign. Best tweet I saw on that was Molly Hemingway saying, oh, good, this will go now unobstructed, because if the Democrats try to do anything to stop this investigation or even say anything about it,
yes,
even if they talk about it,
right,
that has to be viewed as obstruction of justice, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Former Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein goes after James Comey. When this is all aired out, it is going to be fascinating to see where Rosenstein fits in all of this.
Right. Yeah, it will be.
When everything eventually comes out, because he went after Comey really hard yesterday.
Right.
So we'll get to that. You and I talked about this on Friday. A caller brought it up, and we'll talk more about it. Would China stop buying our debt because of the trade war?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody on their state-run media came out and suggested that yesterday. As we said, though, that would have a couple of effects. Would it affect the United States? Yeah, because it would raise interest rates for Treasury bills that mm-hmm. We don't have to worry about that because future generations will end up paying for it. We'll put that on our children and grandchildren, so there's really no big deal there.
Yeah, I don't care about young people.
Yeah, that's where we are. it would increase interest rates. But as we said yesterday, it's one of the safest places to put money in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The rate of return with the security on the finance the U.S. debt. Nobody finances a U.S. debt because they feel nice.
Right. They're not helping us out.
Right. They're not doing it to help us out. They're doing it because of their own self-interest, as we've always talked about. Capitalism, that is what it's about. So if they pull from it, it will hurt them and hurt them in a variety of ways. Where do they put that money where it is as safe and secure? And the second point is, since it raises the interest rate for Treasury bills, it will lower the value of United States currency, which means in the United States there will be more countries coming into the United States in order to buy our goods and services.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you said something. They don't buy up our debt to help us out. They do it in their own self-interest. We can apply that to trade, by the way, because I think a lot of people get it wrong. They put it into this thing of, oh, we're just helping our neighbors, and our neighbors are just helping us. While it is beneficial, they're doing it for their benefit. We do it for our benefit.
There isn't anybody in the United States that trades with China for China's benefit.
Right.
There isn't anybody in China or Canada or
Mexico. I haven't talked to John Brennan yet. You know, he did vote communist one time.
That's true. He might.
I'm just kidding.
There isn't anybody around the world that trades with the United States to help out the United States. Everybody does it for their own self-interest. We'll get to that more. Mark Cuban addresses socialism, says that he believes that Bernie Sanders and AOC are confused, that they don't understand socialism.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So we'll we'll play some of the audio of it. It was actually humorous. He said, look, Bernie Sanders made $1 million on his book and is ecstatic about it.
Right.
So that coming up. By the way, AOC and Bernie Sanders rally against any middle ground on the Green New Deal. Oh, apparently she backed off again on the 12. I was just kidding on the 12 years.
Uh-huh. Right. Right. She was just kidding last time, and then she said it again.
So was O'Rourke kidding about the 10 years?
I think O'Rourke is kidding about running for president.
We'll have the latest polling out there, and the U.S. believes that Iran is behind the Saudi Arabia ship attacks.
Yeah.
We understand now why we're sending a carrier fleet out that way. But a really interesting day yesterday. I mean, nothing was really unexpected. Obviously, the Chinese decided to put the tariffs, you know, announce the tariffs on our Monday morning, which, of course, would have maximum effect on the stock market on Monday to start out the week. And, and it did. Mm-hmm. The stock market going down, 609 points, I believe, something like that. Yesterday is was down as high as 700. The president, again, as I've always said, scatterbrained messages coming out of the White House again, all over the place on it, from saying, see, the tariffs will help our, the tariffs actually help our economy, was one of the tweets that he put out at the same time, where it's, well, we're not sure if we're going to put on the 300, you know, the 25% tariffs on the $300 billion. Why? You do it immediately. This is where the president, again, loses credibility. Because he'll say one thing, but his actions, you know, his actions and what he actually says, he'll say one thing and then do the opposite. But the president didn't jump immediately on and say 25% tariff. All right, you put it on the $60 billion. All right, we're going to put it on $300 billion. If tariffs help the United States, if tariffs was an economic boom to the United States, the president would maximize all tariffs with China. Mm-hmm. He'd put 100% tariffs on China. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't he do that on everything?
Right. If it's a benefit, go the full measure.
Right. He would have put the tariffs on day one. If it benefited the American economy, he would have done it day one.
And by the way, if it actually did benefit the economy, we would be behind it.
Well, we'd be behind it too. Right. If gravity didn't exist. Mm-hmm.
If I just had $1 trillion, I'd be a trillionaire.
Well, no, if gravity didn't exist, I'd be for flying human beings everywhere.
Yes, exactly.
Without an airplane.
Right.
But gravity does exist.
Oh, dang it.
And when you increase the cost of goods and services, it never helps an economy. End of story. I mean, this isn't complicated stuff.
Right.
And let me just find it here.
What do you got?
Because this is true. And we even said it. We said, look, in this particular case, now, we don't believe that overall the president handled trade negotiations in the right way, especially with our friendly trade partners. And we believe that the United States should have isolated China instead of the president isolating the United States with the European Union, Canada, Mexico. The goal of the president should have been bringing all those trade partners together to go after the people that are really not doing the right thing, and that is the Chinese. I've got some feedback over the last couple of days. Well, those small countries, European Union's not a small country.
No.
Canada is our biggest trading partner. Canada, for only being 25 million, and Canada's part of the whole United States thing. And believe me, Canada has the same complaints with China that we do. And so does every other country, because every other country that has any form of technology, including the European Union, would back us up. That's the one response that I got when I brought that up last week. Somebody very insistent that no other countries would stand by the United States. Well, you didn't know because you didn't try.
Right.
But what you do is you unify your friendly trading partners to go in against the big. You know, one of the biggest economic powers in the world, China, that's cheating. You unite the world against them. You don't unite the world against us. And that's where but because I can't do anything about what happened, I can only do, the only thing we can talk about is what's going on right now. You can't change the past. And we understand why the president is doing what he's doing with China, because China is different. And if you've listened to the show, you know, we've always separated what China is doing from Canada, Mexico, where we had free trade agreements on and nobody was breaking those free trade agreements. And the fact that the president and his rhetoric that we were getting killed end up creating a new free trade agreement that does basically 98% of the old free trade agreement to begin with and doesn't even fulfill what he told his most loyal supporters. And we brought this up yesterday. And zero response to that, but it is the truth from Trump supporters. The president lies to his most loyal supporters mm-hmm. on tariffs. Mm-hmm. He says it helps them, and it doesn't. It hurts them.
Well, and beyond that, you're throwing down something that isn't true, and it's a promise that they believe is going to be in place. They believe he's going to fully fulfill, that he's going to keep tariffs in place because it's a good thing, and he's not. The deal, in fact, if you look, he wrote basically an open tweet. That's today's version of an open letter to President Xi of China, saying, look, you had a great deal, and you're going to be hurt badly by this. China's going to be hurt badly right. by this. Well, the U.S. is going to be hurt, depending on how far this goes, is also going to be hurt.
Well, when I say he, and again, remember, we went after President Obama when President Obama lied to his constituents on health care. Mm-hmm. Well, the president on trade has consistently lied to his most loyal supporters, those who support him the most. If you heard our call last week from a gentleman who called, who prefaced his call, I am the biggest Trump supporter in the world, mm-hmm. and I'm there because of trade. By the end of the conversation, he said, well, Donald Trump is wrong on trade.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had to inform him that Trump promotes the fact that the free trade agreements were about what? Were about leveling the trade deficit.
Mm-hmm.
None of the free trade agreements that he has put together, including the one with China, does what his rhetoric is telling, what he is telling his constituents and implying to his constituents, because that's what he rallied about. One of the reasons Trump became president was because he said he will reduce that trade deficit. It's done nothing but gone up.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the president has done, it has skyrocketed. And the free trade agreements said, and by the way, we agree with what he has done in the free trade agreements. We're simply say politically to the populist portion. And remember, the populist portion is some of the biggest most solid support the president has, and what he is telling them that he's going to, you know, equalize it is untrue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true. Tariffs don't benefit the United States. If they did, he would have put them on day one. If there was bad effect, if it didn't hurt the economy, he would have done it day one. And so that to me is the thing that gets to me. And people may say it's a negotiating tactic. I don't believe it's ever a negotiating tactic to lie to your most loyal supporters in politics.
And again, he's still pleading with President Xi to make a deal. So you're promoting something as a positive that you know is not going to stay in place.
Right.
And you're getting the reaction from your base that wants those tariffs in place. They don't want it as a negotiating tactic. They believe tariffs are a good thing. And for that part of your base, that's not going to be the long game for you. And he's very open about it. He keeps promising, these tariffs are a good thing. We're going to put more tariffs on them. At the same time, he's openly telling President Xi to make a deal.
Here it is. Regarding China, Americans have been giving Mr. Trump, this is from the Wall Street Journal, the benefit of the doubt that his tariff strategy is intended as leverage to negotiate a better, fairer trading regime. Mm-hmm. I would agree with that, right?
Yep.
I would agree with that. You would agree with that? I mean, that the Americans are, that's what we're doing. We're saying, well, in this particular case, because China has done this much wrong, mm-hmm. yeah, we're giving the benefit of the doubt. What we're saying is we know the U.S. economy is going to hurt. What else is the other, what other choice do you have? The United States is going to be hurt. China is going to be hurt. It's going to be a political battle now to see who is going to concede first, because they can't handle the politics with inside of their country, or the president realizes it is going to hurt the economy and he may not get reelected. And so everybody is playing this game here of chicken. But regarding China, Americans have been giving Mr. Trump the benefit of the doubt that his tariff strategy is intended as leverage to negotiate a better, fairer trading regime. But Mr. Trump seems to sincerely believes that tariffs are a free lunch. The unexpected good first quarter has greatly helped by tariffs from China. Some people don't get it, Mr. Trump tweeted Monday. But tariffs are taxes that raise the price of Chinese goods for U.S. consumers and producers. They also raise the price of domestic goods to compete with Chinese imports, because U.S. producers tend to raise the prices with the competition. This is what happened after Mr. Trump raised tariffs on washing machines, as we wrote back last May 1st. Mr. Trump may be pointing to the 1 percentage point added to the GDP in the first quarter due to an increase in net exports, exports less imports, as imports fell. But this came after a surge of imports in the second half of 2018 due to faster U.S. growth and as companies tried to get out ahead of Mr. Trump's potential imposition of even higher tariffs. Jobs in manufacturing, which rely on export markets, surged in 2017 and 2018, but that growth has slowed in recent months as tariff uncertainty has increased. By the way, the Dow is down nearly 1,300 points from January of 2018 when the president began his tariff offensive. As they pointed out, with the best 12 months of economic growth since 2005, the stock market's actually lower than it was a year ago. Mm-hmm. They said, look, it's not the only, as we've said, the GDP isn't the only indicator. The stock market isn't the only indicator. But there's something going on when you have 12 straight months of the best growth in 15, over a decade. Mm-hmm. And the stock market is down 1,300 points from when you began this economic revival. There's a reason for that.
And imagine where we would be without the tariffs.
That's what we've always said. What would the economic growth be right now if they didn't exist?
Right.
If you want to get in, we got so much to talk about. Lines open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 of Red Eye. So I don't know, again, there's only a couple of places you can go. China put tariffs on $60 billion now, total of American goods going into China. The only thing that can happen is the president either puts 25 or maybe starts out lower, 10%, or nobody does anything, and they just wait this out to see who crumbles first on this. Mm-hmm. If he's not going to meet, if there's going to be no meetings until next month with the Chinese president, then this is going to go on for a while. If the president comes back and says, okay, I'm going to put 10 or 25%, the only number he's mentioned is 25%,
right,
on it. He certainly didn't do it yesterday because I'm sure he didn't want to see the impact that it was going to have on the stock market. Mm-hmm. The president, maybe the Wall Street Journal says the president seems to sincerely believe the tariffs help. No, he doesn't. He knows that they don't work. He believes he's playing some type of political propaganda win game here by saying that they win, and maybe his loyal constituency will believe that. There isn't an economist out there that believes that you can raise the cost of goods and make the economy better. It's impossible.
Well, impossible. I mean, he says it in the one tweet that it's, the tariffs, the tariff war essentially with China is going to hurt China. It hurts both sides.
It hurts both sides.
If you believe it hurts China, it hurts the U.S. too.
Well, he's trying to make it sound like it's a benefit. If it was a benefit, if it truly helped the economy, the president would put full tariffs on China. He's not, because right. He understands it hurts the United States.
For Travel Centers of America, here is your forecast.
Areas for rainfall today include the northern and central plains and the northern Mississippi Valley. Out west, much above normal temperatures will shift from the northwest into the Rockies and northern central plains. Underneath a strong ridge in the upper atmosphere, a cold front approaching the west coast will bring rain to areas of northern California. And unfortunately, rains continue for areas of south Texas. Another pocket of rain in the northeast should be clearing out soon after a weekend of rain for the mid-Atlantic and northeast. That system eventually clearing out by later today. Rain chances will remain for Boston, clearing by tomorrow, high 56. New York City, clearing again tomorrow, high of 63. Beautiful conditions for most of the deep south. Atlanta will be sunny and 73 today. Dallas, clear and 85. Chicago, sunny, 64. The national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
They're old white conservatives. Feel free to heckle them. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
I think you just did.
It's enough of that.
Man. So the white means good guys.
Huh?
The white means good guys, you know, with the white hats, right?
Is that what it means white guys. As in pasty white skin.
My skin color?
Yes.
No way.
Yes, it does.
That's what it's referring to?
Exactly.
What does my skin color have to do with anything?
Well, I don't know. Your particular skin color is just kind of weird, but if we want to get into that, I guess we can.
Let me look at my skin. It is an odd color. I'm really not proud of my skin color.
My hair's not turning so gray, but my skin is. That's just weird.
Now, my eye color, that's another thing.
Yeah.
All right, let's stop. I have to stop being creepy here.
Yeah.
All right, now, one of the best things that the president said yesterday. Mm. Look, this is a whole mixed bag, because there are great things that the president said yesterday.
All right.
One of the most truthful things that the president said yesterday is a deal would be a great deal for the United States and China. China, because of, I guess, wanting to protect portions of their economy, or what they think is protecting portions of their economy, by making it so hard to have a deal with the United States, is actually hurting their overall economy. Mm-hmm. They're not helping their economy. You know, we've talked about this many times before, and we're not the only ones. Economists all over the world looking at China and saying, okay, see, they're trying to manage your economy as to an export economy. Don't try to manage it in any way. Let it go. Abide by the trade rules. You've got a growing market there. You can produce things there. You're opening up your country to capitalism. Do it. That's the president. This is one thing that isn't talked about at all. The president is offering China one of the biggest gifts that America has ever offered another country.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to open up their trade with the Western world, starting with the world's biggest economy, the United States. And to have a truly free flow of trade, rules and regulations that will benefit the Chinese.
Yeah.
And China, no, we need to protect what we have now. We need to protect what we have now. Well, you can't think that way with an economy.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, you know, the rise of capitalism in China has been interesting to watch. And you know that at some point there is that threshold. There is that tipping point for them. When they fully understand that when you go beyond that tipping point, you're getting closer and closer to property rights for your citizens when you have that kind of scenario in China, then you have a great demand for more of that type of freedom. And that's hard to control in a communist society that has such a large consumer base and has that demand, and the country itself, the government, benefits from that free trade, from those free markets. And I say free markets in relative terms.
But certain bureaucrats do not.
Right.
And that's why. If the Chinese government truly wanted economic expansion and a better quality of life for their own citizens, they would jump on this deal so quickly. Look, the Chinese don't need to make their economy boom. They don't need to be stealing anybody's technology. They don't need to be doing it. And so the president is offering them a great gift. But look, overall, The goal is to get to the free trade deal. The good part of this is the goal to get to the free trade deal that the United States want with China that opens the markets. Mm-hmm. It's not the negotiating tactics of the tariffs. The tariffs are the negative part in order to get to the positive part. The president, and this is, which is just the most the bizarre thing, the president is trying to sell to his constituents that the negative part of it that hurts the economy is the best part to get to the worst part that they don't want.
Yeah.
And that's what, and the perfect example, if you're listening last week, we had a caller, total loyal Trump supporter, and said, Trump's doing the right thing, tariffs help and everything else. We don't need to be trading with anybody else anywhere else. We can keep the economy totally contained within the United States. All we need to do is trade, you know, with the different states. And we went, well, this isn't what Trump's doing. We had to explain to him. By the end of it, he's like, well, I don't agree with Trump. You just started the call saying you're his most loyal supporter. Yeah, but he's still wrong there. Well, then at least you now at least understand what he is doing. And it reminded us a little bit in a different way of, Eric, it was years. I mean, it was years that went when Ron Paul was talking about the fact that he was against NAFTA. And I'm telling you, we would have, over a period of years, callers calling up and saying, well, I don't agree with you guys. I agree with Ron Paul because Ron Paul doesn't want NAFTA. NAFTA is bad. And we said, well, you understand that Ron Paul doesn't want any free trade agreements because he doesn't view free trade agreements as free trade. He views them as managed trade. He wants unlimited trade. He doesn't want any rules and regulations on trade. He wants any American company to be able to deal with whoever they want worldwide without any rules and regulations whatsoever. Like the caller last night who said, you guys don't know what you're talking about, when we had to explain to him that on the bailout, mm-hmm. that the United States government actually forced the bailout money on the biggest banks in this country. He said, you guys don't know what you're talking about. You know, we got that with the Ron Paul callers. You guys don't know what we're talking about. Go, no, actually, here's Ron Paul. Let's go through and see what he has written. And we had to quote Ron Paul. And this was a period of years where people that supported Ron Paul had no idea where he stood on the biggest issue that he promoted.
He wanted unmanaged free trade.
Unmanaged complete free trade.
And with that, I agree.
And so it's interesting that there are, you know, and we have said this in the very beginning. We said, look, what the president, and when the deals were done with Canada and Mexico, and we said, well, these deals aren't going to change what the trade imbalance is of these countries at all. And that's what the president promoted the most. He promoted again just last week when he said, we're losing $500 billion a year. Well, if we're losing $500 billion a year, why would the president be out there with his negotiators promoting a deal that isn't going to change that at all?
Right.
Because the president knows we're not losing. Does this mean that like Obama, who believed that the people that voted for him are idiots, does the president believe that his most loyal support are idiots that he can sell anything to? I have to ask that. If we're going to be fair, we have to be fair. Because the president understands trade now. I'm convinced. Now that he's got Kudlow on there for the last year, he understands trade. And we see where the negotiators are going with the Chinese free trade deal. The China free trade deal is to open up markets across the board between China and the United States. There's nowhere in there where there's going to be permanent tariffs on major products between the United States and China. It's to open it up.
That's the idea.
And so the president is telling you that the negotiating tactic of tariffs is actually benefiting our country, yet he's going to drop all the tariffs and go to free trade, which is also going to be great, which won't change the trade imbalance whatsoever. You understand our confusion. I look at it, though, and say the president does understand the economics of it, but he believes that he has to not tell the truth to his most loyal supporters out there on the populist side.
And there's no reason for it.
There's no reason for it. No, he can simply say, look, this is the...
We're going to put the pressure on China, and they're going to get in line on intellectual properties, and if they don't, then they're going to feel the pain of, of tariffs.
I asked the question, did the president lose any of his base when the trade imbalance skyrocketed, yet the GDP kept going up and up and up and up? What did the president promote? Did the president promote at all or even talk about the trade imbalance, or did he talk about the GDP growing? He talked about the GDP growing. Look, sorry, but we have long memories. I know we tick people off. I've got a few people say, you guys need to stop talking about tariffs and move on to another topic. I know it's uncomfortable for you. But we deal with the truth here, not BS.
And the question is, where do they go from here? What kind of deal can be had now? Because if they had a deal, they had an agreement, and they backed away from the deal, now what does it look like? Because China, when you make a deal, you concede things. You walk away from the deal, you take those concessions back with you. Do they go back to where they were?
I don't know. I
can't imagine that situation.
I don't know, except for the rhetoric going back. Right, I cannot tell you where this is going to end up. I understand, and I do agree with the president based on the situation that we're in now. And I think the administration made wrong moves in getting to this point. But at this point, as you and I have said, we don't know what the other position of the president can be at this point, because if Trump backs off now, you're never going to have a chance in our lifetime of ever getting China to abide by the World Trade Organization rules and by normal rules of trade between countries.
Look, if they're backing away because part of the concessions was, and they don't want to do this, part of the concessions included the enforcement mechanism on intellectual property, then sorry, we're going to have to hold their feet to the fire. And frankly, I think the administration needs to be very clear and very vocal about that part of it. And we need to be very vocal in a very public, they need to be very vocal in a very public way to say they don't want to change their laws. They don't mind stealing intellectual property.
Right. And that's, you know, that should be the, instead of going through the minutia of that, that's what the president should be saying. Look, this isn't a pleasant thing to do because this will hurt our economy a little bit. But in order to ensure that we have decades upon decades of free trade and economic growth with China that we wish to have in a relationship where we deal with trade honestly and with integrity, that's why I'm doing it. I think that his supporters would be totally behind him. They are already, because most Americans understand it. Most Americans that I talk to sit there and look, we understand what he's doing. China is different than, that China is the one that's cheating. Mm-hmm. China is the one that isn't paying attention and isn't abiding by the World Trade Organization rules. So, yeah, we stand by the president with this. But when the president says tariffs help the economy, come on. You don't anybody can figure it. Look, it's as bad as when Democrats used to try to say that raising the minimum wage makes the economy better. They eventually had to drop that because it's wrong. And their point was, well, people have more money. No, what you forget about is the fact that fewer people are employed. And when you raise the cost of goods and services, fewer people are employed, cost goes up, you sell less of that particular product.
Well, the truth works for you in two ways in this case. Politically, it works for you in that you're standing your ground with China. But then beyond that, it works for you in your negotiation with China. When you say to the world, hey, these guys are stealing intellectual property rights, and we're not going to let up until we know that we can enforce a new agreement that includes that enforcement mechanism on those rights, on those properties.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley. Eric Harley, excuse me. I got a frog in my throat there, and that came out. Eric Rarry.
I've been called worse.
Eric Rarry. Coming up, we'll get to your calls and comments following the top of the hour. Plus, Attorney General Barr assigns a U.S. attorney to look into government surveillance involving the Trump campaign. You know, my only concern when I saw that, I thought to myself, no, it's not a special prosecutor. He's just having a U.S. attorney look into it. I'm thinking, don't take 2 years.
Yeah, please. Please. Well, because if Barr's not going to oversee it, the idea is to take it out, you know, take it off of his desk, put some degree of separation between him and that part of the investigation. Yeah. And the problem with that is you can't manage it. You can't micromanage it. You can't manage the timing of it. I don't know that there's much to go through, given how much we already publicly know about that. So I'm hoping it won't take 2 years.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
So where do we go from here? There really isn't, you know, you really can see the path that might be taken by both countries. The next thing would be that the president would look at the rest of what China imports to the United States and put some kind of tariff on that. Whether he would go with 25% or just start with 10%, whether he would delay that a month, whether he would put that into effect today, which would certainly have a worsening effect on the stock market, which I'm sure the president doesn't want. I'm sure people inside the White House are you know, very concerned as to, you know, where this may be going. If the president does invoke that, then China still has $40 billion worth of U.S. imports that it can tariff. So if the president comes out and does 10% on the $320 billion, I forgot roughly what the estimate is, then China comes back and does it on another $40 billion, and then Trump comes and puts 25% tariff on the $300 billion, and then they all just start raising tariffs more. And then you get to the point where both countries will say, we're not going to trade with each other at all. And then you get to the point where, somewhere in there, where China may say, okay, we're not going to finance our portion of the debt anymore. By the way, one of the most interesting points that you made on that was that China finances roughly $1.1 trillion of our $23 trillion debt.
Yeah, 22. Mm-hmm.
22 something, mm-hmm. What it is now, 22.5.
It'll be 23 by the end of the show.
Well, the best thing that Eric said is he said, but every year, the amount that the Chinese, the percentage that the Chinese are financing goes down because our debt is skyrocketing so fast.
The good news is the debt's increasing at such an alarming rate, they own a smaller percentage of that. It at one point was, I think, 8% of our national debt. They own 17% of the nationally or internationally owned debt. Other countries that own debt, they own 17% of that chunk. But 5%, that's still a lot. 5% of it's I think the exact number as of December 2018 was 1.123 trillion in debt. But this is the story was floated. We had a caller actually a few days ago on the program bring that up and say that, you know, they could dump that debt that they own, you know, into the market. it would drive up interest rates, but you would have buyers for that debt.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't be one buyer likely for all of that debt, but other international interests would almost instantly be there for that. And does China want to play their entire hand knowing that there's going to be a deal done? If you know there's going to be a deal done, because they call it, in the stories that I was reading, the nuclear option. You're not going to use the nuclear option when you already know there's going to be a deal done. Trump tweeted, you know, that they're going to be hurt unless they make a deal, which means he wants to make a deal. We already know that the U.S. wants to make a deal. China wants to make a deal. We already know that they do. And, you know, inevitably there's going to be one. So you wouldn't use this nuclear option unless this were some kind of really long, you know, dig your feet in cold war of trade. And that's not what this is going to be likely.
Now, what I wonder is if the, you know, keep me updated if the Chinese pull out, because last time I believe I had a treasury bill was like 99.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was getting 6%.
Right. Yeah.
So there will be people there willing to finance American debt.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you think about that, though, that if it drives interest rates up, what does it do to the stock market? Because keep in mind, when interest rates dropped, you have a lot of companies out there, insurance companies and a number of industries, where companies will invest in things other than, you know, the stock market. They'll mm-hmm. put their money, yeah. they'll park their money right. elsewhere if it's a sure bet. In other words, they're just trying to diversify their holdings as well. So that will drive, again, probably drive interest rates up even, could drive interest rates up even further. We'll see if that were to happen. I just don't think it's going to happen. You might see where they sell off some just to send a message, but it's not going to be great. It's not going to be a great amount.
And so now it's really just a wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't know, over the next month what changes, because we said it when we were leaving here Friday morning, talking about this, you know, there has to be a cooling period. From China's perspective, you're not going to make a deal right now because you're trying to save face. Because they had, by all accounts, they had come to an agreement with the U.S. To back away is something that, again, you're not going to be able to recoup from in terms of the public or international. Really, you've got to look at this as the international eyes on China right now. And China's trying to save face, I think, by staying away from the table. And so we're going to see this cooling off period, and we'll see where it
goes. But I also think that China believes that the president makes that jump, and I bet you there's some in the White House thinking the same thing, that everybody knows that this is tick, tick, tick to 2020. Everybody, the Chinese know this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really doesn't matter. They're a communist government. It doesn't run the same way as we talked about a long time ago, right, that if we got into a trade war, that we even advised the president, get in it early. Mm-hmm. Don't wait until right now, because if this is a trade war that goes on for the next, you know, year and a half and you escalate it, the Chinese are hoping, they're probably saying, look, would we be better off just staying where we are right now? Or is it to our advantage for the president to come back? Is part of the strategy from the Chinese, okay, let's say we're going to go $60 billion and hope that he goes to start even tariffing us more. Mm-hmm. Because if he tariffs us more, this hurts the U.S. economy, and the economy is what Trump has to win the 2020 election. If he can't get that, and the Wall Street Journal had one of, you know, they looked and they said it's very tough to figure out how it might affect the economy. But they said the higher tariffs right now, this is the higher tariffs, not on the 300, but just the 200, they believe would take away from the GDP 0.1% every month that the tariffs take in for the year. So if it stays in for an entire year, that's 1.2 percentage points of GDP.
Right.
That it would take off, which means instead of having a if you were going to have a 3, you'd have a 1.8.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what, again, if the economists in the United States are trying to figure out, you know, how the tariffs will hurt the economy in the United States, the same thing is going on in China. And they're stating, look, the more he takes a risk and says, okay, 25% tariff on the 300, the president saw what happened to the stock market. His advisors saw what happened to the stock market yesterday. They clearly know, look, you don't think that his economists have told him that, look, this has been the biggest expansion this last year that we have had since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest expansion almost in 15 years. Since that expansion started, the stock market's down 1,300 points. That's not a good thing. You don't see that in huge expansions of the government. There's a reason.
Your fundamentals are sound. I don't know. It's been a long time since they've been this sound.
Right. So why isn't the... And so when you have that, what you have are companies afraid to invest. Because the fundamentals are there, yet the stock market is actually going in the opposite direction mm-hmm. over the last year. Why is that?
It's all about government action.
It's all about government action. Right. And it's like companies are waiting, saying, okay, we want stability across the board. We want stability to know what our trade lines are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who will be able to trade with? Where can we sell our products? Where can we invest? Where are the supply chains going to be? We have no idea. It's the great unknown. We've talked about this. One of the worst things for the economy is not the known. It's confusion. It's the unknown. We don't know
what happened after the recession. Nobody could. You couldn't judge the markets properly. This goes back to the banks. They scrambled because. The Treasury scrambled because there were a few banks that they believed weren't solid. So let's put the money in all the banks so you can't tell which banks aren't solid. What'd that do? Made it look like the entire banking system was not solid. They didn't want to run on those few banks. That's why Paulson did that. That's why they made that decision. We don't want those few banks to have a run on them. So we'll put money in all the, we'll bail out, we'll throw money at all the banks. Well, that muddied the water. You don't know who's sound and who's not. When you do that, you freeze. You stop doing business. Same thing with trade. If those trade routes aren't established, if you don't believe that industry is going to be able to serve a massive customer base, or that company is going to be able to serve long-term a massive customer base, if you can't be sure yet, you don't make the investment.
So now this is down to the politics of each country.
Mm-hmm.
Will the communist government be more pressured, or will the Trump administration be more pressured? And because if the economy takes a hit, how long will the president believe and his advisors believe that he can hold that support if the economy turns, and how far will the president go in hurting the economy with additional tariffs?
Mm-hmm.
That's the concern right now in the White House. I don't care what the rhetoric is coming out of the White House, the president saying, tariffs are great.
How much can you do for how long?
Right. That's not what they're thinking. That may be what he is putting out for public consumption. That's not what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know this? Check out the stock market yesterday. Check out the stock market over the last week.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. That's why they're worried. And China's worried too. Everybody's worried because nobody knows where this is going to end. The president stating early yesterday, I don't know whether the tweets meant he changed his mind later on tonight, I don't know, but he said, well, I still haven't made my decision, we'll consider it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, you're not going to make that decision yesterday to say, okay, 25% on the $300 billion and do that at noon. Or do that at 2 o'clock with an hour left in the stock market.
Mm-hmm. Do it through a tweet at 4 o'clock in the morning. But it's not, again, it's known on both sides, it's not sustainable. The question is, how much can you do for how long?
Exactly. And which political system will cave first?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is about politics now.
Well, the one thing we have is the fact that we are a massive energy producer. And no one's talking about this, but
we have,
that gives us the upper hand. That's the one thing we have.
It is.
And that's the real pressure, I think, there.
Well, I believe we're the stronger economy, mm-hmm. and our fundamentals are stronger.
Mm-hmm.
I think the pressure, though, on the president to have a great economy is greater than the political pressure on the president to have a great economy to be reelected in 2020 is greater than the political pressure on the Communist Party in China.
Right. Who lifted term limits last year.
Yes.
So that's, I think, you know, that is where those numbers start to show. When those numbers erode, when they start to erode, that's where you're going to have problems. Can you get that far even?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on trip planning. Drivers often say there are two seasons, winter and construction. Hopefully, you don't have to endure too much of either. Keep your cool when going through construction zones. It's easy to get frustrated. Delays can hinder plans, and letting your frustrations boil over won't help. If you come upon construction, consider the following actions. Pay attention to signs that will indicate abnormal traffic patterns. Keep your distance from the vehicle ahead of you. Slow down and be prepared to stop unexpectedly. Merge safely and early. Don't be the last person to switch lanes. And watch out for workers who work close to the line of traffic. Being impatient can have severe financial consequences. Fines are much higher in construction zones. Give the workers a break. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Jack in Chicago. Jack, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hello. So I think we're reading a little too much into this, tariff situation. I mean, there's only a few different ways the government can raise money. One is to tax people to death. Two is to cut spending, which nobody wants to do. The Democrats don't want to do it. The Republicans don't want to do it. And three, there could be like a consumption tax. So this is kind of like a consumption tax. The only people that are really going to be affected by it are the people that are going to be buying this stuff.
About raising revenue.
Yeah.
It's not permanent.
I think it's not being sold that way. This is all about raising revenue.
It may be big government types may see that as a benefit of it short term, but it's not a long term plan. Right. It's not going to be in place forever.
Right. They're going away. When the China free trade deal happens, the tariffs go away.
Well, I understand that, but the thing is, there is no such thing as free trade. There's always
all right. Well, that, look, we didn't say free trade. We said free trade. Okay. Free trade. So, we're talking. So we're talking. Jack. Hold it, Jack. Wait. Stop.
What?
We're talking. Don't take what we're saying out of context. We said free trade agreement. That's what we meant. We're not talking free trade because if we had free trade, there would be no agreements. You would just be trading with whoever you wish without any government rules and regulations on both countries. So let's make that clear now. Nobody is talking about absolute free trade. We're talking about managed free trade agreements. But in those managed free trade agreements, there are very little tariffs put on between both sides.
I think going forward, we're going to have to start tariffing stuff because the thing is,
okay, again,
we have huge government spending.
So you just want to raise taxes? Then why not just put in a VAT tax?
Yeah, I mean, it's like because
you're off the topic.
Right, if you want more government revenue, right. If that's your thing, then I guess you should vote for somebody other than Trump. If you want to raise taxes, then there are plenty of people promising to do just that. And by the way, you're calling from the right state.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, you are. Thank you for calling from Illinois. That this is a good thing because it raises taxes and we need more revenue. That's not the purpose of these tariffs even instituted by the president. Now, again, I can't blame him for saying that because the president is talking about how much tax money it's bringing into the Treasury as if it's a good thing.
Right. But don't believe it's going to solve anything.
That's not the intent. The intent is negotiation and they will go away. But, hey, interesting take. Hey, I want more taxes.
If they're not off the rails, they're off on a tangent. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. We do podcast this show. If you miss a show or part of it, please go to our website, redeyeradioshow.com, keyword podcast. You can listen to any of our shows in their entirety if you like. And you can also spread the message, the good word about Red Eye Radio. Stop laughing. So go to redeyeradioshow.com, keyword podcast, and check out the Extra Mile podcast as well. Brand new podcast where we're putting together some conversations with people in the trucking industry, the stories of people behind the wheel, behind the products and services that you know, and also coming up here, should be launching in the coming days. Sitting down with my friends from J.J. Keller and Associates, talking about CVSA Road Check 2019. That's coming up in early June. What you need to know is going to be on that podcast coming up soon. The Extra Mile podcast is there. RedEyeRadioShow.com, keyword podcast.
866-90-RED-EYE, as we talk about the current trade war with China. We go to John in Portland, Oregon. John, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Well, hi, guys. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good.
Okay. I think I know what the president is trying to do, the bottom line at the end of the road with this trade deal. He is talking to China and everything about this trade deal. But really, he is talking in the ear of U.S. manufacturing. He is telling U.S. manufacturing, you need to start bringing your product home here in the United States and start making it here. U.S. manufacturing has got their ears up. This is why the stock market's going up and down. And they're saying, oh, my God, if he charges 25% to have our goods shipped back here, Nike, for example, an Air Jordan shoe is $350. Phil Knight is saying, I'm going to have to sell it for $750. Then Trump is going to say, hey, you brought your manufacturing here. Yes, great. Now what we're going to do, we're going to give you tax-free, no tax. You're putting American people back to work.
No, he's not. I know how Phil Knight works. He'll move any manufacturing from China to Vietnam. You're not going to bring it back. You're not going to bring it back to the United States.
Let me
ask you, what part of the free trade agreement covers what you have just said?
I'm asking you
a question. Besides just rhetoric of what you think he is going to do, what in the China Free Trade Agreement backs up what you have just said, that the China Free Trade Agreement will get companies to bring back manufacturing to the United States?
Well, let me ask you this. I know what you're saying. Let me ask you this.
Now, you don't answer. No. Excuse me. You don't. I'm asking you a question, and you're answering a question with a question. You made the statement. You think you know what Trump is trying to do.
He wants equal trade.
What? That's not.
He wants equal trade.
Well, that's not the China. The China. We went through this last week with another caller who said the exact same thing as you. None of these free trade agreements will do that. None of them. The free trade agreement that the president is the free trade agreement that the president is negotiating with China will not equalize the trade deficit. It won't come close to it.
Let me ask you this. What does China make by itself that we want? Nothing.
Cell phones.
Everything.
Cell phones.
Everything over in China.
Okay, what's your again? I don't answer that again. This call's going nowhere because you're not discussing what's really going on. You're telling us what you think or you want to go on. And what is China selling us that we want? Everything that people in the United States voluntarily buy.
Well, right now it's hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right. Don't ask me. It's not up to me. It's up to the consumer. The consumer in a free market voluntarily is buying tons of things from China. So it's not a question for me or you to ask. It's a question of reality and what actually happens in the free trade markets. You may not like that. But in the free trade agreement that the United States is currently negotiating, I don't see any reports that the free trade agreement, that the problem is that China is upset because the United States plans on keeping permanent tariffs in order to move those jobs out of China. There's no reporting that that's where the free trade agreement is going. There is no argument from the Chinese that the Chinese are stating that's unfair because the president is trying to equalize the trade deficit and therefore he's putting tariffs on our products permanently in the trade agreement. I'm not talking about the tariffs as a negotiating standpoint, but that there are actually tariffs in the free trade agreement. And this is where I go back to the fact that the president is not telling the truth to his loyal populist supporters, but his populist loyal supporters believe that he is doing just that. And he is not. In the free trade agreement, you will not get, John, from Portland, you're not going to get what you think you're getting because he promised that in the campaign, and he's still promoting the tariffs are good and will bring jobs back when it's not going to be in the China Free Trade Agreement. That's the frustrating part of it. And we go back to, again, why do people wish to believe BS? Why do we soak up BS and we want more of it and we keep buying into it?
Well, and you look at I was going through the list of items. This is the additional $300 billion in items that we buy from China every year. The administration did the took the first step in putting up to 25% tariff on an additional $300 billion worth of goods. So this is the notice of proposed rulemaking, right? notice of public hearings surrounding this. And you go through the list. It's very extensive. And it covers everything from pork to cell phones, chicken, turkey. There are a number of things that we get from China. By the way, you can choose with your own dollar. You can vote with your own dollar every day on this. If you're going to buy things only made in the U.S., that's your right. You can do that. There's a massive demand for the things that come from China. There's no sign of that changing.
Email here. China needs us. We don't need China. We can get it from the Philippines.
No.
Need, I don't know what need means.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't need 90% of what we have to survive.
Mm-hmm.
We trade because it makes our quality of life better because we are able to get cheaper goods. Need, I don't know what that, I don't know when people say we don't need. Well, we don't need a lot of stuff that we have, but we want it. And when people start talking about the fact that, well, what do we need from China? Well, ask the people and the consumers that buy from China. You can make that case. What do we need from Canada? What do we need from Mexico? The president doesn't think that way because the president's trying to open up a free trade agreement with China.
Mm-hmm.
In order to lower the subsidies and tariffs to open up China. And by the way, understand that the president, if we wish to, the part of it of increasing U.S. manufacturing is about China opening up their markets more to the United States, not closing markets down to the Chinese, as many Trump supporters believe that he is doing in the free trade agreement. That's not what's happening in the free trade agreement.
No, it's not.
Look,
the entire back and forth, when establishing these trade routes, you do it for a reason. They have the ability to produce things much cheaper that the American consuming public wants to buy. There are a number of things that the government has done along the way leading up to Trump being president that has made it more and more expensive to produce those items here at home. We'd love to see some of that manufacturing coming back to the U.S., but that's not part of this equation. That's not part of the plan here.
Right. The free trade agreement doesn't cover that part. And like I said, how many? Actually, the last caller provided a great service. A Trump fan who believes that the free trade agreement is about leveling out the trade deficit, which means that message, that false message, is still out there. It's not true.
No.
That's not what the president, the president wishes to open markets that the United States would be able to compete in with other countries that China currently subsidizes, but the president is not trying to equalize the trade imbalance and opening up those markets that are being subsidized in China is not going to come close to equalizing the trade agreement, because most likely when the economy booms, we will be importing more from China, not less.
And when it comes to companies bringing manufacturing back to the U.S., you forget the other part of the equation, and that is retaliatory tariffs. That's going to limit their consumer base. They can move to South Korea. If the example was Nike. Nike can move anywhere else in the world, well, many other places in the world, and still have a low cost of manufacturing.
Right. They'll move to the place that's not being tariffed.
Mm-hmm. They're not going to, if they come back to the U.S., they know that's, you're basically jumping into the fire. If there is a real trade war going on that would be long sustained, which it can't be, because at some point the economy is going to feel the negative effect.
I will say one thing that, you know, when we talk about what will bring some of, you know, those jobs back, the laborer jobs that we outsource in all likelihood are not coming back to the United States, as we know. But who knows what will happen to manufacturing, even with things like clothes and shoes, when automation gets involved completely in it.
Right.
When automation can do it all.
And that won't be about jobs. It won't be about the manufacturing jobs like you think it will.
It'll right.
be about people programming the automation.
It'll be high-tech jobs.
But it will be a much lower
right.
Number of jobs.
Right. It's not going to be
for each task.
It's not going to be the blue-collar jobs.
No.
at that point. I mean, that's what will bring manufacturing back to the United States when the automation gets to the, but you were just looking at some of the farming automation that exists now today, that exists, that is going to be in use probably in the next decade, that will mean that labor that we have used in farms will not be needed nearly to the extent that it even is still now.
Right. And this is for the smaller items like strawberries, sensitive items like strawberries and small tomatoes, where before you needed basically a human hand to harvest that kind of fruit or vegetable. And that's no longer the case. They already have the robot developed.
If you believe, for example, like 10 million low labor jobs that have been exported to other countries are coming back to the United States, no, they're not.
No, that's not going to happen.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So now it's wait and see. You know, you've got, like I said, the president put out yesterday, the White House, you know, the possible. I mean, they haven't called for that tariff yet, though. They haven't instituted that tariff.
This is the first step that you have to take. It's part of the process. You have to notify the public of public hearings surrounding those tariffs, which would go into effect, later in the summer. You're not going to have it'll be next month before even the first hearings would happen. So from there would be several weeks at least. So don't know how long the each country, I guess, can hold at this point.
So it's a standoff.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it, as always. Some interesting other stories out there. Attorney General William Barr to appoint a U.S. attorney, assign a U.S. attorney to look into government surveillance involving the Trump campaign.
Yeah,
here we go.
This will be interesting because you take it off of the AG's desk. You have this assignment here, and it takes it off of the AG's desk. And this would be the U.S. Attorney for Connecticut, John Durham.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been assigned to this part, the 2016 beginnings of the whole Russiagate thing. And what I'm wondering is about the stuff we don't know. Think about all the items we've talked about, the known items we've talked about on this program for quite a while, starting with over 2 years ago. It wasn't starting with it, but a big chunk of it came via Circa News with John Solomon and Sarah A. Carter delivering actual court documents and everything else. So if you look at some of those known items, I'm wondering what they'll find that we don't know about yet. And are those known items just the tip of the proverbial iceberg? I have to believe there's a number of things where the dots aren't connected yet, and they're going to be connected very quickly in this case.
You know, there was a great column, Byron York writing it in the Washington Examiner, about the actual FISA warrant. What we know, and just the way that he that the way that he wrote it, what we know already about the FISA warrant application and why it was so flawed and how the FBI was wrong on everything.
Right.
And I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs here because it's really just fascinating. He says, the warrant application made a three-point argument. Point one was that Russia was trying to influence the 2016 presidential election. Point two was that Carter Page had a history of involvement with Russia and the Russians. Point three, Page was a Russian agent conspiring with powerful Russian officials to influence the election. And as he writes, point one was true.
Yeah.
Russia was trying to influence the presidential election. Point two, Page had a history of involvement with Russia and the Russians. Yeah, that was true. Point three, that he was a Russian agent conspiring with powerful Russian officials to influence the election. That's where the application falls right off the rails. Well, that's the important part here because that's the part that gets you a secret warrant.
Right.
Not that you do business with Russia.
Right.
And he goes on the fact of that even though parts of it are redacted, it's still possible to make out just how grossly wrong the FBI was. And he talks about how the application explained how Russia had a long history of hostile intelligence activities, and the U.S. intelligence authorities believe Russia was behind the hacking and release of the emails, both from the DNC and Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta. It noted that Page, an energy consultant who had worked with Russia in the 2000s, had once been targeted for recruitment by actual Russian agents who were later prosecuted. Page, who was not accused of violating any law, cooperated in the case, and the application quoted from his earlier interviews with the FBI. That was accurate. So then the application moved on to 2016. And said the target of this application is Carter Page, an agent of a foreign power. The FBI believes that the Russian government's efforts are being coordinated with Page and perhaps other individuals associated with Donald Trump's campaign. At another point, the application said the FBI believes Page has been the subject of targeted recruitment by the Russian government to undermine and influence the outcome of the 2016 U.S. presidential election in violation of U.S. criminal law. That's in the application. That's a serious charge, right?
Mm-hmm.
At another point in the application, it said based on Russian government historical efforts to influence U.S. elections, redacted, and the information discussed herein regarding Russia's coordination with Carter Page to undermine and improperly and illegally influenced the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Well, none of that turned out to be true. After 2 years of investigation, Mueller never charged Page with any wrongdoing. In 448 pages, the Mueller report did not allege that Page was an agent of Russia. The investigation did not establish that Page coordinated with the Russian government in its efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election, the report said. The report said Mueller, of course, also included that the evidence did not establish there was any conspiracy or coordination between Russia or anyone associated with Trump or any other American for that matter. The FBI's assertion that Page was a Russian agent working with Russia to fix the election was out and outright wrong. To support its case, what did they use, Eric? The dossier.
That's something that they didn't use the first time they petitioned for a warrant on Carter Page.
Well, because if you look at this, in July of 26, here's what they write. In July of 2016, Page traveled to Moscow to deliver a speech at the new economic school. That was actually true and was reported in the press at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Then they said, while in Moscow, the FBI said Page had a secret meeting with a man named Igor Seshin, the head of the Russian energy giant Rosneft. The FBI said the two men discussed a quid pro quo deal, a future bilateral energy cooperation in exchange for lifting sanctions against Russia. That information right there came from the Steele dossier. At that point in the FISA application, the FBI noted that this information came from Source One, which was Christopher Steele. And on that right there, that they had the secret meeting, the FBI assesses Source One to be reliable. That was Christopher Steele, and also suggested the people who hired Steele might have a political motive and were likely looking for information that could be used to discredit Trump's campaign. Regardless of the motivation, it appears the FBI was wrong on the simple fact that the meeting never took place. Next, the FBI said that Page, still on his Moscow trip, met with the senior figure in the Russian government and a Putin associate. The two met secretly, the FBI said, and their agenda for the meeting included raising a dossier that the Kremlin possessed on Hillary Clinton and the possibility of it being released to candidate to Trump's campaign. The information also came from the dossier and was attributed to Steele. It appears the FBI was wrong again on that Page Devikin meeting. That was the man's name. The Mueller report never alleges that such a meeting took place. Then there's two entirely blacked out pages, followed by the FBI's allegation that that meeting took place, which was false. When the declassified part of the application resumed, the FBI cited a 2016 Washington Post article alleging, in the FBI words, that candidate one, that's Trump's campaign, worked behind the scenes to make sure political party, the Republican Party's platform, would not call for giving weapons to the Ukraine to fight Russian and rebel forces, contradicting the view of almost all political Republican Party foreign policy leaders in Washington. At the time the FBI wrote, the Republican Party platform was a staple of Twitter and cable TV talk. Mueller investigated that at length and did not allege that it was part of any conspiracy or coordination between Russia and the Trump campaign, and Carter Page was not even involved in that at all. Finally, they use the 2016 Yahoo article that said the exact same thing and came from Christopher Steele.
Right.
They did not note that it was Steele. The FBI noted the article referred to a well-placed Western intelligence source who told Yahoo that Page had met with both of those men that was previously reported. The well-placed Western intelligence source was, of course, Christopher Steele, but the FBI did not want to say that it was that its confidential human source was blabbing to the press. So in the footnote, the Bureau told the court that the FBI does not believe that Source One, Steele, directly provided the information to the press. That was false. The FBI was wrong on that, too. After several blacked out pages rounded out the application before the FBI reached its conclusion. As discussed above, here was the final conclusion. As discussed above, the FBI believes that Page has been collaborating and conspiring with the Russian government. The Bureau wrote, based on the foregoing facts and circumstances, the FBI submits that there is probable cause to believe that Page knowingly engaged in clandestine intelligence activities other than intelligence gathering activities for or on behalf of such foreign powers and knowingly conspires with other persons to engage in such activities and therefore is an agent of a foreign power as defined by the law. That allegation was the heart of the Mueller investigation, and the special counsel did not allege that Page or any other American was involved in what the FBI described. So what you got is, from what we know, all the information to get the FISA warrant. You've got those two redacted pages there, completely redacted, but everything else that has not been redacted was based on the Steele dossier that was false.
Right.
Now, what we're told from the Republicans is the redactions will even damn those in the FBI legally more.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so then you have...
I'm sorry, but I'm not even a law enforcement official. That's bogus. To me, that's bogus.
Well, and then remember when you had some of the information, the first information that came out, the signatures that were on the warrant applications. And the fact that when that report came out, the Democrats went out of their way to make sure that, well, the dossier didn't really mean anything. And we said, well, then why did you use it in October? Why was it used at all then? Well, it didn't really have much weight in that. Actually, it did.
And
it clearly made the difference.
And from what I read today, Comey signed that application.
Right. You want to know why they're all out talking to the liberal media right now and pointing at Trump as the bad guy? Because they're really trying to get ahead of this. That's what's going on here.
Oh, you see, Rosenstein today blasting Comey.
Right.
It's like, whoa, man, where did
this... Who would have seen that coming, by the way?
Well, Rod Rosenstein unloaded on former FBI Director James Comey in remarks to the Greater Baltimore Committee on Monday, slamming Comey's turn as a partisan pundit, reiterating that he deserved to be fired and faulting him for trampling bright lines that should have never been crossed.
Well, I guess we should have seen that coming, knowing that Rosenstein was, you know, was an integral part of him being Comey getting fired.
And Comey also last week was derided Rosenstein's character and suggested his soul had been consumed in small bites.
Yeah, right. By Trump, yeah.
Now the former director is a partisan pundit, selling books and earning speaking fees while speculating about the strength of my character and the fate of my immoral soul, Rosenstein said. This is disappointing. Speculating about souls is not the job for police and prosecutors. Generally, we base our opinions on eyewitness testimony.
What did we say all along, though, about Comey? What did we say? He doesn't talk like an investigator.
No, we said that from the very beginning. Everything has been, the only word I can use from the time we first saw him in the public, which is really the Hillary thing, from that point on, something about him is just odd.
Weird.
But he's weird, odd. He does not at all, and we said this from the very beginning, he does not seem to have the mind that you want in any type of law enforcement investigator.
He doesn't use the language.
No.
He doesn't talk like an investigator. He talks like this guy who is overly idealistic. That's how I would, you know, phrase my description of him, overly idealistic. Not somebody who is promising things, someone who's talking in a grand fashion that doesn't even fit the setting that he is in.
A snowflake in law enforcement.
Yeah. Which is weakness. Because
it tells me
that you didn't bring the proper mindset to that role in the first place. And confirms that you should have been fired.
But when I read that yesterday, I'm like, wow, that's just really good. Just the way he puts it together so simply that when you break it down, they start out with, oh, Russia's terrible, Russia's this, and Russia this. Then they go right to the third point, which is, oh, and this guy did business with Russia. And then they go to the point, we can prove this guy is a Russian agent. And their main evidence, everything that's been redacted, their main evidence, all of it is based on the dossier.
Right.
It's unredacted. All the main evidence that Carter Page was a Russian agent colluding with the Russians to, well, destroy the election in violation of the law is all based on the Steele dossier.
Well, we asked the question early on. If Carter Page, who is who the FBI wants you to, or those that were acting in the FBI at the time, wanted you to believe he is, how is it that they have zero on him?
Yep. Drip, drip, drip. Every single day we're getting more. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Chris in Las Vegas. Chris, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Chris.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
First-time caller. I listened to you guys for a long time. Love your show.
Thank you.
I find it pretty rich that the FBI is trying to throw Carter Page under the bus. When wasn't he previously working with them on a case where he helped them prosecute a Russian foreign national?
Yes, we mentioned that when we just read part of York's column that that was actually in the FBI report, part of what his interviews were with the FBI. But yes, he helped the FBI in that particular case.
Correct.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, I just find it rich that they will just whatever suits their agenda, that they will just turn on anyone and everyone. If it suits their purpose.
Well, and that's it. There clearly was an agenda there, and thank you, Chris. There clearly was an agenda there. Now, the question is, who was responsible? Did anyone break the law, and what laws did they break along the way? Because potentially we're looking at a massive abuse of power. Here's your forecast.
Areas for rainfall today include the northern and central plains and the northern Mississippi Valley. Out west, much above normal temperatures will shift from the northwest into the Rockies and northern central plains. Underneath a strong ridge in the upper atmosphere, a cold front approaching the west coast will bring rain to areas of northern California. And unfortunately, rains continue for areas of south Texas. Another pocket of rain in the northeast should be clearing out soon after a weekend of rain for the mid-Atlantic and northeast. That system eventually clearing out by later today. Rain chances will remain for Boston, clearing by tomorrow, high 56. New York City, clearing again tomorrow, high of 63. Beautiful conditions for most of the Deep South. Atlanta will be sunny and 73 today. Dallas, clear and 85. Chicago, sunny, 64. The National Forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Never stops. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Hurley. I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. So I never finished my statement, and thank you for sort of getting me back on track during the bottom of the hour, not knowingly getting me back on track, but you did, because I mentioned earlier, I said, I can't wait till everything is flushed out here and we find out, with the dossier, Comey, McCabe, but I had talked about Rod Rosenstein and how he had gone after Comey yesterday and said, I can't wait till all of this comes out to find out, where he is on all of this, because he came out against Comey yesterday, calling him basically a partisan hack. Comey took after him last week. But remember, it was McCabe who said Rosenstein seriously offered to wear a wire around the president and had done it numerous times, had offered multiple times to wear a wire in meetings with Trump. So where does this, this is the question you have to ask, are all of them attacking the others because they wish, they hope that they can turn state's evidence first?
Well, they're creating their own shelter, their own umbrella, their own protection. Possibly. I think that's certainly a legit theory. I don't think that if you look at it, assuming that it's accurate and true, that Rosenstein had offered numerous times to wear a wire around the president, and knowing what we know of the relationship between the president and Rosenstein, remember that day, did they have helicopters following Rosenstein's car when he went to the White House? Remember that day? It was so stupid, the coverage. He's on his way to the White House. We believe, breaking news, he's in his car. Wait, he stopped at Jack in the Box. It was one of those.
He stopped at McDonald's. There's Bill Clinton.
Right, exactly. Working the drive-thru. And I put it in one of those gotcha moments. What they call them? Bombshells.
Bombshells.
Breaking news. And at the end of it, it was, hey, we had a great discussion, and he's agreed to stay on.
Well, here's a question that I eventually want answered. Just to put all the pieces together. Why was Rosenstein allowed to stay on and then be part of determining whether the president should be prosecuted or not?
Right.
Or whether there was enough evidence to prosecute the president mm-hmm. for obstruction of justice, which clearly Barr said Rosenstein was part of the decision, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
When he signed one of the FISA warrants... And the accusation from McCabe is it was Rosenstein who had offered to wear a wire around the president. And this was all trying to find, they wanted to get conversations to make it, you know, to get the evidence to show that Trump should be removed under the 25th Amendment.
Right.
Somebody has to answer that question for me eventually. Now, McCabe could be lying about it. McCabe mm-hmm. is known to have lied.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosenstein might not have been serious. In that interview he did back in February with 60 Minutes, he said it was serious. You know, we were told it was serious mm-hmm. that Rosenstein wanted it. Well, then why was he involved? Wouldn't you see a conflict of interest? I do.
Right.
If it was true.
Well, and so then go to the other side of that, and for the sake of this part of it, assume it's not true. Did others have a problem with the fact that Rosenstein wanted to play by the book? That Rosenstein wanted things done by the book? That he was not going to accept anything that had an agenda attached to
it? That is a possibility.
Not that he's pro-Trump, but he's pro-justice. That I want this done by the book, and... So then all of a sudden they throw out, and maybe he makes a joke about wearing a wire around the president, and then they took it and said, well, we'll use this against him because he's right. getting in our way.
You have to ask, what we have to find out, though, is when he signed off on one of the subsequent FISA warrants, mm-hmm. knowing what we know today about, again, we haven't seen the redacted parts of it. The Republicans that have given the impression it's going to be worse. I don't know how it can be much worse than what we have seen in the unredacted version, as we just had brought you Byron York's column in the Washington Examiner, tearing it all apart as to what evidence they had, and they had zero evidence to get a secret warrant on Carter Page. It was all false.
Right.
It was completely false.
Right.
And there wasn't really, well, it was only part of what we used. Well, and unless there's something completely different in that unredacted part, and the Republicans that have seen that unredacted part have said, well, when you see the unredactions, that's the part that will prove to you the bias in the media and that they didn't have evidence. Well, then you have to ask the question to Rosenstein, why did you sign for a subsequent warrant?
Right.
To keep the FISA warrant and the surveillance going on Carter Page. He has to answer that question, and then we have to find out whether he truly, his mindset was to remove the president because of the 25th Amendment.
Right.
And that's why he was willing to wear...
He's the one who signed the assignment for Robert Mueller.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. Right. But then he also wrote the memo. This is why I said he is one of the most interesting pieces of this entire thing. And I'm not making allegations either way because...
Yeah, I don't know.
Because you see, you go, well, he's the one that said fire Comey. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that told the president, no, you don't need to put in the fact that the Russia investigation is in there. Probably was thinking you don't even want to put it in there. Look, we can justify firing him for all of these reasons. You don't need to put the Russia investigation in there. Trump, you know, was very loud that it should be in there, which is one of the reasons that they wanted obstruction of. This is interesting. If he told Rosenstein was with Barr, together with Barr, made the decision not to prosecute the president for obstruction of justice.
Right.
Rosenstein was there many times when Trump was telling him, when he put out the memo of why we're going to fire Comey, Trump was there telling him, no, you need to fire Comey because of the Russian investigation. If anybody knew whether he thought the intent was there for even the liberal view of obstruction of justice, which is the wrong view of obstruction of justice, that some in the Mueller team held, it would be Rosenstein and Rosenstein alone that would know the intent.
Right.
But since he was involved in that at that point, should he have been one of the people making the decision, or is that a conflict of interest? Like I said, when I think of Rosenstein, there are so many things that go through my head that I can't yet, until I get more information, get a grasp of how he fits into the entire puzzle.
Well, because you have to ask yourself, signing off on the warrant, right? In his position, what would that process be? Who would have, in signing that application, who would have presented information to him, and did they present information to him that was false, the dossier, knowingly, to have him sign off on it to give themselves a buffer with the FISA court? Because if Rosenstein believed at that time when he signed that application for the warrant, if he believed it was good information because he had been told by someone at the Justice Department, maybe multiple people, Strzok, Comey, or anyone else, that it was legitimate, and he believed them, then he did not knowingly petition the court falsely for a warrant. There is no perjury there. The lie would be whoever presented that dossier to him.
Oh, right. And good information. And again, that would be the question. What did you know about that?
Right.
And there have been other people that have worked in the Justice Department before that have signed FISA warrants, and they say you don't necessarily know what you're signing.
Right.
You just sign off on it because the FBI has told you this is the evidence that they have, but you're not going through all the evidence of yourself. Yes, that would be, again, I need to know that also.
Right. And did they know that, knowing the process? Did they know that by having him sign off on that warrant application, it would free them of any risk of perjury down the road? We present it to him. He signs off on it. He doesn't know it's bogus information. We do. And is that why the Inspector General's office, is that part of the reason the Inspector General's office is doing their investigation here?
Let's go to Mark. I want to go to this call here because to address this specific question, which we've addressed in the past, but we didn't in the last segment where we talked about Comey. So I want to address it now with Mark in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Mark, go ahead.
Good morning. How are you, gentlemen?
Very good.
Good. I wanted to comment. You had made the comment that Comey did not sound as though he was law enforcement. And my understanding was, and I am in Arkansas, my understanding is he was the Clinton attorney when they were here running their government in Arkansas, mm-hmm. and he was kind of their fixer in Arkansas. And
yeah,
so
Comey
went to Washington, D.C.
Here's how I'll address that. Comey has been a DA.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. Comey was a U.S. attorney. When you're a U.S. attorney, you understand investigative techniques.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. You talk as such. You talk as such.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. Trey County is looking for, he's probably at home looking for exculpatory evidence.
Yeah.
He probably uses that in his personal life.
By the way, Trey, I guess you can find the audio. I saw the transcript, but Trey Gowdy said, this is really easy for the U.S. attorney from Connecticut.
Mm. That's interesting because that's what I said at the beginning of all this when we started making comments on it. You have Barr assigning this to a U.S. attorney out of Connecticut. And I asked the first question I asked, well, what else will he learn? Is this the tip of the iceberg? But we have a number of known facts already put together for him.
Yeah, there's a headline. Trey Gowdy, investigators assigned to examine Russia probe origins have an easy roadmap.
Right? Well, no kidding. I mean, and it's based on a lot of the work that's been done by the media, real journalists that have been out there doing that part.
And that's the whole point. That's why we talk about Comey as investigator.
Yeah.
What's this U.S. attorney doing? Right. His investigators are assigned to examine the Russian probe origins.
Yep.
They have signed what? An attorney to do that. So that's my point. That is no excuse. Well, he was an attorney and was never officially an FBI agent. Doesn't matter. He understands.
You still talk with the same terminology, knowing exactly what the task is.
And our evidence, as Eric just said,
Trey got it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, we've got a great money-making idea for Fox News.
All right.
No, I think it'd be huge, actually. It could be a primetime show that would bring in, we believe, a huge audience that they could market it for a period of a week or two and get a huge monster audience. And we'll tell you what we think what they should do coming up here. Not that we're in the habit of doing it, but we just think it would be a great idea, and it would be something that we would watch. I would
definitely.
I would tape it and watch it back,
because
I'd probably be sleeping if it was prime time. But I would tape it, and I would watch it, and I do think it would get a huge audience. Also coming up here, the U.S. says Iran likely behind the ship attacks. More on, I haven't looked and seen what the stock market futures have been doing here.
I haven't looked yet.
Yeah, I haven't checked either. The other thing I want to get to is you and I talked yesterday about Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders and their anti-loan shark proposed legislation that would limit credit card interest rates to 15% or all consumer loans to 15%. And we talked about the fact that Tucker Carlson on Fox News agreeing with it and thinking it's the right way to go. We thought his arguments were just so incredibly weak from somebody who is usually very, very strong on their arguments, but his was terribly weak. But there was a story yesterday about companies now coming out and thinking we can be payday loans and especially targeting young people. And these are loans that you can get. And I guess secured and unsecured for as low as like 20%, but it's for specially targeted for young people to replace payday loans, that they realize there is a huge market out there for young people because of their living expenses today.
Right.
To be able to take loans or have a line of credit and get short-term loans and have the interest rate not be 400 or 500% APR, but right around the 20% mark.
Dow futures up 111 right now.
Wow. Okay.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.